Good morning. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I'm talking with Caitlin Burvey about her book, A Collection of Modern Fairy Tales, When Magic Calls. Good morning, Caitlin.
Good morning, Tracy.
Thanks for sending me your book. I really enjoyed When Magic Calls.
Good. I'm so glad.
I have a lot of questions to ask you about it, but I was really impressed with the writing and so many aspects of what you've done here. But before we go on, why don't you tell our listeners what the book is about or what it is?
Definitely. So When Magic Calls is a collection of modern fairy tales. What I wanted to do was take some of the classic stories and imagine what they would look like if they were taking place today, how they might be different. And then I also wanted to show those stories from different perspectives, from people of different cultures, and then from characters who don't always get to have their point of view, the one that's the spotlighted one.
Very good. You've played a lot. I guess I shouldn't say played, but in here you have a lot of different points of view, a lot of different voices. I mean, you go sometimes in first person and third person, but you also use second person and second person collective, you and we and us. It's very gutsy to do that, but you've pulled it off really well.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I thought so too, but you never know what a reader will think.
Well, I'm sure. No, it adds a different twist to it. And you've done something different with each fairy tale. Some are really recognizable and some are not quite, but you get an idea.
I didn't want it to be super obvious.
How long have you been working on this?
This collection took me about 3 years. I started it while I was getting my MFA in creative writing. My last semester, I did an independent study of fairy tales, and that's kind of where the idea came from. And ever since, I just kind of have been plugging away at them.
It's great. It's really fun, and it's really interesting. One thing that I like also is that, well, we have a story set in the Museum of Magic in Truth or Consequences? Or Fairy
yes.
Tale Museum? Right. And we see that again. It comes up again. So you kind of have a circular structure going on here as well as individual stories.
I do. Yeah, I wanted it to feel like these stories were all taking place in the same world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ways I was able to do it. I also, that was one of the first stories I wrote, was one of the ones that takes place in the Fairy Tale Museum. And I liked the museum so much that I wanted to go back.
Yeah, I like it too. I want to go there.
I think they should build one.
I do too. Okay, that's the next project, okay?
Sounds good.
So, Caitlin, you've been writing forever. I know that you really do like the magical world to write in, but you're also involved in a lot of other projects dealing with writing.
I am. I work as an editor as well as a writer, so I help other people with their novels. I also teach creative writing, and I am working on a nonfiction book on point of view.
Oh, perfect. I know that you lead workshops, etc. How important is a workshop for creative writers?
It's super important, in my opinion, because you get to get other people's feedback on your writing. So it's kind of like seeing what a reader will think of it before you actually give it to a reader. And so you can catch little points that are confusing, or maybe you thought you put something in there and you really didn't, so you need to go back and add it. But also getting to see the way other people will approach the same subject can be really helpful in getting you to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
You're not stuck kind of telling the same story over and over again.
Right. And they can always point out such things as points of reference and cliches and whatever happens so that your writing is free of that kind of thing.
Definitely.
So, I mean, you've written 11 stories in here. Did you have other ones you were playing with too?
I did. I had about three other ones. One just wasn't working.
Yeah, I get that.
And then the two others weren't fairy tale enough, I think, for the collection.
So on the ones that you chose, why those particular fairy tales?
So the Hansel, there's one that plays with Hansel and Gretel.
Uh-huh.
And that, I wanted a fairy tale that was really recognizable, because with that story, I'm trying to illustrate how fairy tales change over time with society.
Ah.
So I needed people to immediately recognize the fairy tale.
Right.
So that we could say, okay, this is the one we're working with. And then some of the other ones were accidental. Some of them were on purpose. So Smoke Whispers, that one I started writing wasn't originally going to be a fairy tale one. And then it turned out to be a play on Sleeping Beauty.
Right. So. Oh, cool.
And then Letters from a Woo
started
out being just Snow White inspired.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up having an element of the Changeling in it as well.
Right.
That one has two fairy tales.
Right. So have you always loved fairy tales?
I have. And I've always liked both the originals and the version that are specifically for kids.
Uh-huh.
And that's one thing that I do tell people about my collection is it is for adults. They are based on the old versions of the fairy tales, the originals.
Right.
Not the versions for kids.
Right. Right. And you do bring that up in one of the stories. You talk about studying the original Grimm stories, which were really not that nice, and how the fairy tales have been diluted for kids.
Yes, they have been. And people forget that fairy tales were not originally just for children.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were stories people told each other while they were working, doing a mundane task.
Oh.
So some were for children, and then some were like our TV, basically, back then.
Oh, I like that comparison. I didn't think of it like that, but yeah. Why don't you go ahead and read for us something from one of the stories?
I will be happy to. Let me open this. So what I'm going to read today is from Smoke Whispers, and I'm going to read the first page and a half.
Okay.
Her melodic call seeped into my dreams like smoke beneath a door and wrapped its tendrils around my will. Come, she said. Come, she begged. Lightning struck the tree outside the window, severing our connection and startling me awake. The hotel room vibrated with the force of the thunder. With shaking hands, I rubbed cold sweat from my forehead onto the sheet and rose to open the blinds. A skinny pine smoldered outside. Undulating fingers of smoke reached into the night sky like her voice into my dreams, and I shuddered at the gray vapor's message. She'd found me. Again. Riding my twisted boxers, I remained standing in front of the window. Each time lightning flashed, I saw my haggard reflection like a ghost staring back at me, and remembered my father's words from decades ago. When you hear her voice, he drilled, what do you do? Wake up and stay awake. I dutifully replied every night before bed as a boy, and sometimes even as a teenager. And how long do you stay awake? Until all thoughts of her have disappeared from my mind. My father would nod his approval, but on some nights, when I was feeling brave, I'd plead in a small voice, but she's hurting. Lies, my father spat back every time. Always, I'd flinch. But we stole from her. We're the reason she hurts. He'd stand and move to the door. We didn't take anything that doesn't rightfully belong to us. How did their lives belong to us? They were born to serve. We were born to lead. So their lives are ours to do with as we see fit. He'd leave, and I'd think of the price a Nang was forced to pay to extend my life and ensure I prospered. The thunder outside continued as freezing rain poured from the clouds and coated the dark ground in ice and slush. I rubbed warmth into my arms, unable to ignore the small, dark birthmark on the inside of my left bicep. Shaped like a king's crown, the mark expanded when I flexed and was as clear as a tattoo. Most people mistook it for one, but our family knew better. That crown represented our abilities and our self-inflicted curse.
Yes, and it goes from there. So, which of these 11 stories is your favorite?
My favorite is Letters from a Woo.
It's
the first one in the collection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my favorite because I had to work the hardest to get it.
I can see technically that it's very well written, and there's a lot going on there. So yeah, I would be proud of it if I were you. Tell the listeners a little bit about that one.
So Letters from a Woo is about a Chinese girl who was created at birth, and so she's actually a changeling, and the real little girl was sent to the changeling realm, and her mother doesn't like her because she's not her real baby.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a play on Snow White and the evil stepmother.
Right.
But her mother has also asked her to use her abilities as a changeling in this story, and the main character is struggling with that because she still wants her mother's love, but she doesn't agree with what she's being asked to do.
And it's set in modern times. I like that.
It is.
Mm-hmm. I bet that was difficult to do.
It took some working, some research.
Yeah. So was it difficult to take license with these old tales?
Not as difficult as I think it would be if I were working with something a little bit more modern.
Oh, interesting, right.
I think people are used to seeing the old ones reworked, especially with things like the Maleficent movie.
Right.
And even Frozen. I mean, traditionally, the Snow Queen is evil.
Interesting. I was thinking of those when you were, when I was reading those, how they change over the years and take on different meaning. And some of these are really rather macabre, and some of them are fun, and some of them are romantic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got everything going on there.
Yeah, I wanted to play with all the different aspects of them.
Mm-hmm. And like I said before, the different voices are fascinating. I love the you one, the second person. That's kind of a spooky one.
There's also Voices of Sacrifice. That has that in the second half.
Voices of Sacrifice. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. That's one will give you nightmares.
Yes. It's based on Bluebeard,
mm-hmm.
which was originally created, they think, so that commoners could warn each other about a nobleman who was a serial killer.
Right.
They couldn't speak out against him in real life because they would be punished.
Right.
So they told a fairy tale instead.
Isn't that something? So you really went mm-hmm. into that realm.
I did. And with that one, I wanted to do it from the point of view of his victims
right.
instead of the traditional one who gets away.
And you've put it in the collective of the victims, which probably wasn't that easy to do, was it?
No. That one took some work, too.
I bet.
Yeah.
Very well crafted.
There's a balance when you do that
uh-huh.
to figure out how much can I create this character and still have them represent most of the people
mm-hmm.
and how much is too much where they become a specific person instead of a collective.
Oh, right. So you have a really nice webpage at CaitlinBerve.com, CaitlinBerve.com, and it's also ignitedinc.com. They kind of link together.
They do. So Ignited Ink Writing is my editing and writing advice, and then CaitlinBerve.com is my author one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're definitely interconnected.
And they're very lively, dynamic websites. There's a lot of interactive aspects to it about magic and what is your magic that I really enjoyed looking at. Yeah, did you build that yourself?
I did. Oh. I did both of them myself using Squarespace.
The multi-talents of a writer, huh?
Definitely, yeah. You're wearing more than one hat.
Absolutely.
When you decide to publish.
That's right. So what is next? You're writing this nonfiction book on point of view, you say?
Mm-hmm. Point of view and perspective in creative writing.
Great.
hopefully that'll come out this fall sometime.
Okay.
And that one, if there are any writers out there, I found that there are a lot of general how to write books, mm-hmm. but not a lot that dive into a specific aspect.
That's true.
Of writing.
That's true. The point of view is one that's, it's hard to pin down.
The thing about point of view that a lot of authors I don't think quite grasp and that will help them with it is its character development.
Right.
What you choose for point of view is going to help you develop your character. And if you think of it in that way, sometimes it's easier.
Oh, I like that. I like that connection. That's really true. I think it's a difficult point for a lot of writers to get that, the point of view right and stay in the one you've chosen. But I can see the character development involved in that.
Yeah, it's hard. And then if you make the right choice, it's a rewrite. It's not a revision.
That's right.
I mean, if you make the wrong choice.
Exactly. And in revision, often, that's one thing you do have to fix. I find myself having to do that. Go back and say, whoop, not in the right point of view. That's another reason I like my workshop people.
Yes, they will absolutely point that out.
So will you write more magic?
I will. I'm actually working on one that you've heard about before. I am trying to do my Necromancer trilogy next.
Oh, good.
So I'm finally ready to go back to it. It was my MFA thesis, and I needed a break.
yeah, I get that.
But that one is about a 7-year-old little girl who has the powers of a necromancer. And the first person she decides to save with her powers is a gang member.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells a lot of the story. So
yeah,
that's my next project.
Great. Oh, I'm glad to see you going back to that. I always wondered what happened with that one because it was good. It was really good. It had a lot of potential.
It's one of my favorites that I've started and not finished.
Uh-huh.
I got a little stuck in the middle. I've written the end and the beginning, and there's the middle chunk that I think I have figured out now.
You know, that I hear that often with writers, that middle part really gets them down, the middle doldrums.
Yeah, someone told me in a critique group one time, they were like, I feel like you're saving something for a later book, and you shouldn't be doing that.
Oh,
and I think they were right.
I like that. That was a good comment. That's going to be a trilogy, right?
It is.
Good. Mm-hmm. Good. So you created Ignited Ink to be a help to other writers.
I did.
And
yeah.
You do a lot with that site, and you also do tweets and podcasts. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Ignited Ink Writing is my YouTube channel. It's also the website. It's a blog. And I fill it with writing advice for other writers. One thing that happened in my MFA program is most of the people around me were writing poetry or hybrid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the person who was devoted to fiction. So whenever someone else tried to write fiction, they would often ask me instead of a professor for advice first, which I thought was bizarre.
Yeah.
But it led to this because I kind of fell in love with helping people in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so my blog and my YouTube channel and all of that is just an extension of me being able to teach creative writing.
That's great. And people can find all those links at ignitedink.com, correct?
They can, yes. And same thing, my author websites, you can also go to katelynburvey.com and it's linked to my creative writing stuff too. That is also, if anyone else is a writer out there, if you have a blog or a video channel like I do, a lot of those are what inspired my point of view book, or questions that I got from there, or posts that I wrote and didn't get to go as in-depth as I wanted.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're kind of going off some of the feedback you got.
I am. It's a good place to test ideas.
Right. And you also teach for Colorado Free University, a creative writing course, correct?
I do. I teach an introduction to creative writing course, and then in that one we talk about point of view, but also character development and plot and kind of how to get started writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my next one is kind of a follow-up course to that one, and in that one we talk about setting and stakes and your personal style. So they kind of go together, but you don't have to take them in order or anything.
And these are all online?
They are online right now.
Right.
And normally I do them in person, but obviously that's not possible.
That's not the time for that.
Usually there's one a month.
Okay. So what, with all the other things you do about writing and for writing and in writing, when do you write? Do you have a definite writing schedule or process?
So it changes as my schedule does.
Uh-huh.
I used to write at night a lot after my roommate went to bed.
Uh-huh.
And that is a habit I developed in graduate school, because in graduate school, most of your classes are in the evening. So it kind of shifts your schedule.
Right.
And now, in probably the past 6 months or so, I found that I'm too tired to do that at the end of the night.
Right.
So I try and get it done after I work out in the morning.
Oh.
For an hour, half an hour to an hour, I'll work on my own stuff. So I was just going to say, I have that luxury because I work from home.
Right.
So I can devote my mornings to something like my exercise and my writing. But I also work later into the evening than most people do.
I think it's important to touch base with your writing as often as you can.
It is.
And one thing I always ask my authors is, there's this whole theory of pantsing versus plotting. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
I'm a little bit of both.
Uh-huh.
So I started as a pure pantser. I would just start writing and go.
Uh-huh.
And it worked really well until it didn't.
Right.
I wrote one book in graduate school. I took a novel writing course where the goal was just to write a novel, first draft, by the end of the semester.
Mm-hmm.
And the book that I wrote then did not work pantsing. So it kind of depends on my story. I can cheat a little bit, because a lot of authors will say the first thing that they say is the beginning or the character.
Mm-hmm.
What I see first in a story is the climactic moment.
Oh, okay.
So it's basically the end. So even though I'm pantsing, I know where I'm going.
Did you do that? Did you know the fairy tale first that you wanted to work with? Or did you start something and go, oh, this reminds me of a fairy tale? Or how did that come about?
So it's a little different for each one.
Mm-hmm.
The very last story is called Bones of the Soul.
Right.
And that one was not originally going to be a fairy tale. It was this idea that I had of, what if an artist was watching you, or a character, and it didn't freak you out, but you were a little bit flattered, and they basically chronicled your life. And then it evolved into a fairy tale. So that one plays more with the idea of the prophet in fairy tales, the person who sees the future.
Mm-hmm.
And the groups of three that you see a lot in fairy tales than a specific one.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are ones like Voices of Sacrifice.
Yes.
Where I went into that saying, I want to write a Bluebeard version, and I want to tell it from a different perspective, and I'm going to try and use this first person plural.
Well, I like them all. I was just thinking about Bones of the Soul and the kid there and the different culture and the disease he has. I can see some of your medical training coming through on that one.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bones of the Soul is a lot of my beta readers' favorite.
Oh, interesting.
That one and Borrowed Skin, Borrowed Year. That was the other one.
I like that too. Was it hard to figure out the order to put these in?
Yes. I've spent a lot of time on that.
Yeah, it's like a puzzle. What goes first and why?
Yeah, the only one that I knew for sure is Bones of the Soul was last.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Mm-hmm.
I always always knew that. And then a salty invitation was always second. I would have maybe liked that one to be first, but it's in second person, and I was afraid people would think they would all be in second person and then wouldn't give it a chance.
Because it could be off-putting second person, but the way you've done it isn't.
Right. I worked really hard at the second person.
Right.
I just like the idea of the reader getting to be in the story, too.
That's what I was going to say. In second person, it does put the reader in the skin of the story, and skin is used not as a pun here. I mean,
yep.
Wolf Girl's haunting also. It's a little bit longer. Tell me the thoughts behind that one.
So Wolf Girl was my version of the person raised by wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to play with this idea of how people will see something that they like and then they need to own it in order to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you do that, it destroys the thing
right.
that you are enamored with.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to show that too. And also show how even though she was raised by wolves, that doesn't mean that she needs or wants to be reformed or to become human.
Yeah, there's so many levels to so many of these, and even just that one with the aspect of making her a deity and a goddess and unwillingly on her part.
Yes. And that one was an interesting one. I had a teacher who gave us a prompt in school, and she said, I want you to think about a story. And then before you write it down, I want you to tell it to a friend and record yourself. And that's going to be your first draft. So that's what I did for that one. And I
oh.
think it's a very different story because of that.
Speaking of prompts, you have them on your Ignited Ink page. People can get prompts from you.
They can. I send out a monthly one along with some like writing industry updates. And I like to celebrate my authors on there. I'm an editor too, so
mm-hmm.
anytime one of my authors publishes, I let everyone know.
Great. And I hope that when things clear up, you were talking about having a book signing in Farmington. So I hope that can happen in the future.
Yes. I've talked to Amy from Amy's Bookcase
mm-hmm.
about it. And I grew up in Farmington, and that was my bookstore.
Right.
I spent a lot of time in there.
Amy's does have your book. You can get it from her still. Mm-hmm. You can also get your book on your website. You can buy it directly from you.
Yes.
Okay.
And most places books are sold,
right.
too. And there's also an audiobook and an ebook in addition to the print one.
Who recorded the audiobook?
I did.
Good for
yeah.
you. Good for
I
you.
Narrated and mastered it. But I also, again, got to cheat a little bit. My brother is a music composer and producer.
Oh.
So anytime I got stuck using the software to record my audiobook, I just called him.
Perfect.
I was like, what does this mean?
Yeah, your whole family was involved in this one. That's great. Your mom is the artist.
Yes, my mom illustrated them.
And I like the illustrations. They're subtle, but they definitely add to it.
They are. She does that. Silhouette style.
Mm-hmm.
She's done it for most of my life, and I really have always liked it.
Yeah, I do too. Well, okay. It has been great talking with you, and I hope that when the next book comes out, we can talk again, or before that.
I would love either.
And that was Caitlin Burvey talking about writing and talking about her book, A Collection of Modern Fairy Tales, When Magic Calls. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.